Thrawn said, his eyes narrowing in thought. On the other hand...
On the other hand, what?
Hardly the right tone for a hostage to take toward her master, Thrawn said.
I'll keep that in mind. On the other hand, what?
Our goal is to gather information on the Nicardoon and their plans, Thrawn said slowly, his eyes still narrowed. We've stirred them up at Rapark and Urch. Perhaps it's time now to do the same at Primea.
That sounds dangerous, Thalias warned. What if Frangelic doesn't agree?
I wasn't planning to tell him.
Thalias felt her lip twist. That's what I thought.
Don't worry, Thrawn soothed. If we do it right, none of it will reflect badly on the Garweans.
Great,
Thalias said heavily.
She could appreciate Thrawn's consideration for their hosts, but to be honest, it wasn't the Garweans she was worried about.
Killori had always hated foreign receptions. Diplomatic receptions were even worse. The strange voices and sounds, the odd and often disgusting faces and body types, the alien odors. Especially the alien odors. All of it added up to the waste of an evening, a day, or occasionally an entire excruciating week. All in all, he would much rather have stayed in orbit on the Garwian ship. But Yiv was here, and he'd ordered Killori to come down to deliver a first-hand report on the situation in Killori's part of the chaos. And so Killori was here too, suffering through the alien odors, watching and waiting his turn from a distance as the benevolent held jovial court in a corner with some alien diplomats. If Yiv finished his debriefing quickly enough, maybe he could talk the Garwian shuttle pilot into running him back to the ship while the rest of the delegation talked or drank themselves stupid, or did whatever else they'd come here for.
Your makeup is untidy,
a severe voice came quietly from behind him. A family hostage needs to maintain proper decorum. Go elsewhere and fix it. A familiar voice somehow. Frowning, Killori turned around. A pair of Chiss, one male and one female, stood a couple of meters back. The male was tall with a haughty demeanor and full Chiss formal wear robes draped over his shoulders, while the female was shorter, dressed in a far less elaborate outfit, with some kind of thick textured makeup slathered on her face. Her shoulders were rounded, her eyes lowered, her expression like that of a favored pet who's just been slapped. Killori watched as she bowed low and slipped away through the crowd of chatting dignitaries. Killori looked back at the male, wondering who the female was to him and why she'd reacted so strongly to his rebuke. His face, now in profile, seemed as vaguely familiar as his voice. He felt his winglets go rigid. The face, the voice, it was Thrawn. The Chiss turned away, but for those first few seconds, Killori was rooted to the spot. He'd been told there were two Chiss aboard the Garwian ship he'd been hired to navigate, but they were supposed to be some stuffy academic type and his companion, or servant, or some such. Only it wasn't. It was Thrawn. Thrawn in civilian garb, running under an assumed name. And that could mean only one thing. A big fat bonus. His first impulse was to head straight over to the benevolent, cut into whatever conversation he was having, and give him the news. But common sense and caution intervened. Even if Yiv didn't have him whipped for sheer insolence, breaking protocol that way would draw unwelcome attention. Better and safer to wait until the benevolent had a moment free. And while he waited for that moment, Thrawn was standing by the sweet-sour section of the food array, surveying the different offerings, when Killori caught up with him.
And stay away from the Kiki,
he warned, pointing to a mix of red, orange, and pale blue half-moons.
It takes a particular set of digestive juices to handle it properly.
Interesting,
Thrawn said, peering more closely at the bowl. Odd that our hosts would even include such a specialized dish.
Maybe,
Kilori said.
But you'd be surprised how many people will gladly trade a minute of delectable taste for an hour of gastric discomfort. I believe you were aboard my ship.
Your ship? Thrawn frowned, and then his expression cleared. Ah, you mean you were Envoy Proslis's navigator? I'm Artistic Master Sforno, Chief Curator of the New Neck Art Collection.
Pleased to meet you,
Kilori said, wondering briefly if he should give his own name or instead come up with something fictitious. Neither, he decided. Even if Thrawn didn't recognize Kilori's face, he might remember his name, and a false name would be too easy to expose.
What brings you to Primea?
The hope of finally putting to rest the absurd theory that the Vax and Garweans had a trade relationship back in the Midorian era, Thrawn said. It was proposed 80 years ago by that fool professor. He broke off. But of course, you're not interested in such things.
I'm afraid history and artistic theory are far above my intelligence,
Kilori said politely, with a flicker of cynical amusement. Thrawn could change his name and play dress-up all he wanted, but he would never pass himself off as a true academic until he recognized that such people loved to rattle on about their specialties, whether their audiences wanted to hear it or not.
But I'm sure the Vac records will have everything you're looking for. Can I offer you any introductions?
I've already spoken with all those I need to, Thrawn said, craning his neck and looking around. I'm also familiar with most of the species here. Few of them have art that's worthy of the name.
He lifted a finger.
I haven't seen one of those before. You know them?
Kilori felt his winglets stiffen. Thrawn was pointing straight at Yiv.
I believe they're called Nicardoon.
Really? Thrawn said. I've heard some vague and ridiculous stories about them. I don't suppose you could get me through that crowd.
I might,
Kilori said carefully. Was it really going to be this easy?
I believe the Pathfinders have had some dealings with them. If you'd like to wait here, I'll go see if he's amenable to a conversation.
All right. But be quick, Thrawn said. I have early rising meetings and can't remain here much longer.
Of course.
Expecting everyone else to bend their schedules around his. That was more like a true senior academic. Yiv was laughing at some joke when Kilori reached him. The malevolent's eyes flicked to him, the rippling of his shoulder symbionts warning the newcomer to wait his turn. Kilori took another step forward, waited until Yiv paused for a breath, and cleared his throat.
He's here,
he said quietly.
Who's here?
One of the Vax chortled, sparking another chorus of laughter. Either Kilori had unwittingly provided an extra punchline to the current joke, or else the group was so drunk they were ready to laugh at anything. But all the humor had vanished from Yiv's face.
He is here?
He asked. Kilori nodded. Abruptly, Yiv boomed out a laugh, the sudden sound startling all the others to silence.
A moment of leave, my fine friends,
he said with a cheerfulness that didn't extend to his eyes.
I must bid you all farewell for a few moments. I suggest you avail yourselves of the lavish dining display provided by our hosts.
Kilori waited until the crowd had cleared out. Then, at Yiv's small gesture, he stepped to the benevolence chair.
Thrawn?
Yiv asked, in a tone warning that Kilori had better not have interrupted him for anything less important.
Yes, your benevolence,
Kilori confirmed.
He's at mid-distance behind me, dressed in Chiss formal wear.
He dared a smiling twitch of his winglets.
He's traveling as an art expert under the name Sforno. He's also heard of the Nicardoon, and would very much like to meet one.
Would he now?
Yiv said, his symbiont settling into their epaulet pattern.
Let's not disappoint him then. Please, bring him over.
Yes, your benevolence!
Kilori turned and retraced his steps to where Thrawn was waiting.
Come with me,
he said.
General Yiv the Benevolent will see you now.
General Yiv,
Thrawn said, scowling.
A military type. So, unlikely to know anything about his species' art, then.
I really don't know,
Kilori said, feeling sudden tension in his winglets. Surely Thrawn wasn't going to back out of the meeting now. The consequences of such a blatant snub might be catastrophic, and not just to Thrawn and the Chiss.
But he might. You never know what bits of knowledge military people have tucked away. You should at least take a moment and ask him.
Thrawn considered, then gave a small shrug.
Oh, very well. If only because I can't properly retire to my quarters until my companion returns.
Yes, that's... I'm sure you'll find the general interesting,
Kilori said. Companion? But hadn't he called the female a hostage before? But that didn't make any sense. What kind of hostage traveled openly with her captor? For that matter, since when did the Chiss culture deal with hostages?
Come with me!
Yiv was waiting silently as the Pathfinder and Chiss approached, a half smile on his face, an unblinking gaze in his eyes.
Your benevolence, may I present Artistic Master Sforno of the Chiss Ascendancy? Master Sforno, General Yiv the Benevolent of the Nicardoon Destiny.
General, Thrawn said, inclining his head in greeting. I understand that you're a military man.
That's right, Art Master,
Yiv said.
I understand that you aren't.
A hint of a smile touched Thrawn's lips.
Indeed, he said. A shame. Military men are so seldom interested in art.
He half turned and pointed to a large decorated cloth hanging from the ceiling to near the floor.
That tapestry over there, for instance. I would wager you haven't even noticed it.
Of course I have,
Yiv said.
It hangs between the hard drinks table and the private entrance to the Premier's office suite.
Really?
Thrawn said, looking back at the tapestry and the unassuming door beside it.
How do you know that's the Premier's private door?
Because I've been in his office, of course,
Yiv said.
He and I have had many long and interesting conversations together. Would you be so good to fetch me a drink?
Thrawn half turned in the other direction, where a waiter was just passing by, and deftly plucked one of the sculpted glasses from his tray.
And the Premier invited you in by that door?
No. I've always been brought in through the public entrance on the other side,
Yiv said.
But I have a skill with architecture, and it was obvious where the door marking the private entrance exited here into the Grand Assembly Chamber.
I suppose I can understand the Premier wanting a quick escape from the tedium of these events.
Thrawn sniffed at the drink, then stepped forward and offered it to Yiv.
I trust this will be to your liking.
I'm certain it will,
the Benevolent said. He held the glass up to his left shoulder, watching with casual interest as one of the symbiont's tendrils slipped in and sampled the liquid.
Yes, I imagine the Premier might occasionally wish to move back and forth between public and private events. I personally find it more interesting that the passageway between the two rooms is too long.
What do you mean, too long?
Longer than it should be, given the design of the area,
Yip said.
I trust you aren't offended by my little pet.
Not at all,
Thrawn assured him.
A poison detector, I presume.
Poisons and other inconveniences,
Yip said. He pulled the glass away from the tendril, watched a moment as it continued to undulate, then took a sip of the drink.
Ah. They're faster and more precise than most inorganic tests for such things. They also provide an interesting topic for conversation when all others lag.
Interesting that you say they,
Thrawn said.
I would assume the correct term was it.
Yiv chuckled.
You see? Already it offers opportunity for discussion. Why would you guess the Premier needs a too long passageway?
I'm sure I don't know, Thrawn said. Perhaps a hidden door built into the corridor wall leads to additional quarters, or a sanctuary. Or perhaps the extra space is for a guard station to prevent others from using the shortcut. Tell me, what do you see in the design of the tapestry?
I'm hardly an expert,
Yiv protested mildly.
You asked my thoughts on the Premier's private comings and goings,
Thrawn reminded him.
It only seems fair for you to indulge me in turn.
Yiv took another sip and studied the cloth.
Symmetrical pattern,
he said.
Contrasting colors. Different sets of contrasting colors becoming brighter and tending toward red and blue as it flows from top to bottom. The fringe on the left-hand edge seems shorter than the corresponding fringe on the right.
Shorter, and the threads are also slightly thicker than those on the right,
Thrawn said.
Are they? I can't tell from this distance.
I studied them earlier from a better vantage point.
Ah,
Yip said.
The hanging itself is clearly old, which probably explains the inexpertise of its design and construction.
It's certainly old,
Thrawn said.
But I would submit that the design irregularities are deliberate. It was clearly created by two different weavers, working in both coordination and contrast. That suggests the Vax honor both aspects, working for unity, while at the same time celebrating difference and uniqueness.
I would say that's a fair assessment,
Yiv said.
Interesting. And you determine that solely by studying a single hanging?
Hardly, Thrawn said. There's a great deal of other artwork here. All of it displays and defines the Vax cultural ethos. What do you see here?
I see what all beings see in others,
Yiv said.
Opportunity. For you, the opportunity to add to your knowledge of art. For me, the opportunity to make new friends within the churning sea of life that makes up the chaos.
And if the Vax don't wish to be friends to the Nicardoon?
The benevolent smile faded.
We would consider such a rejection to be an insult.
An insult that would need to be avenged.
To be dealt with, Yiv corrected. Avenged is far too savage a word. Your observational skills are impressive.
Some things are obvious, Thrawn said. The tendrils on your symbiote, for example, with the inside group thinner than those on the outside. I presume from their rhythmic movement that the inner ones sample the air in the same way the outer tendrils sample your food and drink.
Indeed, Yiv said,
his smile widening even as his eyes went a shade cooler.
Few people have ever grasped that fact and distinction. None have grasped it so quickly.
There was a movement at the edge of Kilori's vision, and he turned to see the Chiss woman slip past him. Thrawn looked over as she walked to his side, peering closely at her face.
Better, he said, but not perfect. You will rise an hour earlier tomorrow morning and practice.
She bowed low.
Yes, my lord,
she said softly.
And this is?
Yiv asked, gesturing toward her.
A person of no consequence, Thrawn said. Now that she's finally returned, it's time to retire for the night. Thank you for your time, General Yiv. Perhaps we'll have an opportunity to resume this conversation another time.
Indeed, Artistic Master Sforno,
Yiv said, inclining his head.
I look forward to it.
He watched in silence as the two Chiss wended their way through the crowd. Then he again beckoned to Kilori.
So that's the one who stole my ship from Rapak,
he said, his voice thoughtful.
Interesting.
He's more competent than he seems,
Kilori said, wincing a little. The whole conversation had seemed pretty pointless. If Yiv blamed Kilori for wasting his time...
You think that display showed incompetence?
The benevolent said contemptuously, still watching the Chiss.
You think that just because there were no loud voices or discharged weapons, that we didn't engage in combat.
But...
Kilori looked at Thrawn as he disappeared through an archway.
Trust me, Pathfinder,
Yiv said, his voice dark, his symbionts undulating in quiet agitation.
I understand this person now, and he is every bit as dangerous as you told me. You were wise to bring him to my attention, and then into my presence.
Thank you, your benevolence,
Kilori said. He still had no idea what had just happened, but if Yiv was pleased, he certainly wasn't going to argue the point.
What are you going to do with him?
Yiv took a sip of his drink.
The choices are three. To take him as he leaves this event, to do so at another time during his stay on Primea, or to do so as the Garwian envoy leaves for his return to Solitaire. All three present difficulties and dangers, not the least of which is my reluctance to move overtly against either the Vax or the Garwians at this point.
Or the Chiss,
Kilori warned.
The Chiss are irrelevant,
Yiv said scornfully.
They only move after they themselves have been attacked.
The capture or murder of a senior officer might qualify.
Only if the officer in question is flag rank, Commodore or above,
Yiv said.
Really?
Kilori asked, frowning.
I didn't know that.
I'm not surprised, Yiv said. It's not a subject they talk of openly.
Nor, presumably, do they speak of traveling with hostages,
Kilori said.
But so she appears to be.
The benevolent snorted again.
You're imagining things.
Am I?
Kilori countered.
I heard him tell her to go fix her makeup, that a family hostage needs to maintain decorum.
Yiv waved a hand.
A transparent bluff, designed to make me think there are things about the cheese we don't know. It was obviously spoken for your benefit.
He didn't know I could hear him.
It was a bluff,
Yiv insisted. But there'd been some hesitation in the benevolent's voice just then. Thrawn certainly might be playing him, just as he'd said. But if he wasn't, if the Chiss really did have a hidden hostage culture, there might be other, more crucial things about them that were also unknown.
So what will you do?
Yiv turned an icy stare toward him.
Have you become my confidant?
He asked.
Or been raised to the rank of tactical commander by the Destiny?
I beg your benevolence's pardon,
Kilori said, cringing back.
I only ask because a decision to take him during the Garwian's departure may require some level of awareness or participation on my part.
Yiv eyed him thoughtfully.
A point,
he conceded.
Very well, Pathfinder. Unless I decide differently. The plan will be to intercept the Garwian ship on some pretext as it leaves Primea.
His eyes locked on Kilori's.
You will make sure they don't escape into hyperspace before my ships engage.
Yes, my lord,
Kilori said, his heart beating painfully. For a Pathfinder to be part of such an operation was a huge violation of every rule and guideline in the Navigator's Guild Code. If it ever came to light, not only would he be finished as a Pathfinder, but depending on the operation's outcome, he might well find himself in the Executioner's chains. But he had no choice. His going and very private dealings with Yiv had already put him dangerously far over the line. If the Benevolent decided his tame Pathfinder wasn't useful anymore, Kilori would again find himself on the short track to destruction. And certainly getting Thrawn out of the way would be a good thing. The Nicardoon were ultimately unstoppable. And the less death and destruction they left in their wake, the better for everyone. Yes, Kilori decided. Whatever Yiv wanted him to do, he could certainly handle it. Chapter 12. Aurelani had seldom known General Bakif to be angry. At least, she'd seldom known him to be angry with her. He was more than making up for it now.
What in hell's name were you thinking?
He snapped, glaring as if he was trying to melt her into slag by eye flame and willpower alone.
Allowing a Skywalker to be separated from her caregiver is bad enough. Actually engineering that separation takes matters to an entirely new level of illegality.
Never mind that,
Syndic Sistalmu ground out, doing his best to aid in Bakif's fire-starting efforts. In contrast with the General, Aurelani was quite familiar with Sistalmu's anger.
Those are minor military matters, and they're not why Syndic Thurfian and I are here. What we want to know is how you could let Senior Captain Thrawn insert himself again into Garwian politics!
Indeed,
Thurfian seconded. Unlike the heat radiating from Aurelani's other two interrogators, his tone and face were the frozen shell of Chila.
Do the aristocrats somehow fail to make ourselves clear?
Captain Thrawn wasn't inserting himself into politics,
Aurelani said, keeping her voice even. She'd never found much credence in the old saying that soft words eroded hard ones, but she certainly didn't want to make Bakif and Sistalmu any angrier than they already were. Especially with Sistalmu a nanosecond away from demanding that the entire Syndicure convene to consider charges against her. Unlike her first officer, Aurelani didn't have a conduit into the sort of family intrigues that could provide her with a counterattack or an exit strategy.
Really?
Sistalmo said, his voice heavy with sarcasm.
He travels aboard a Garwian diplomatic ship in the company of a Garwian envoy to a world we ourselves have no political ties to, and that has nothing to do with politics. Have the Garwians converted their diplomatic corps into a knitting club?
The mission was one of reconnaissance, Aralani said. Captain Thrawn is trying to determine where else the Nicardoon may have established themselves.
Have these Nicardoon attacked the Ascendancy?
Thurfian interrupted.
Have they shown any indication that they might attack the Ascendancy?
They destroyed a refugee ship within one of our systems.
So you claim,
Sistalmo said.
The Sindicure has yet to see solid evidence that the Nicardoon are the ones responsible.
All of which is irrelevant anyway,
Thurfian said.
If there's neither attack nor imminent attack, it's not a military matter, but as Syndic Sistalmo has already stated, a political one.
He turned his glare onto Bakif.
Unless you're prepared to claim that General Bakif personally authorized this mission.
Not at all,
Aralani said quickly. This tactic, at least, she knew. Sistalmo was throwing his net wide in the hope of sweeping in as many people as he could. She and Thrawn were already tangled in the mesh, and she had no intention of letting Bakif be drawn in alongside them.
But as I'm sure you're aware, Syndic, situations sometimes arise where events proceed too quickly for consultation with superiors.
An interesting assertion,
Thurfian said, the temperature in his voice dropping a few more degrees.
Tell me, has Solitaire then lost every one of its triads? Has the Ascendancy lost every one of its triads? A ship in deep space may have only one-way communication, but once Thrawn landed on Solitaire, that excuse disappeared. If he didn't report to Chila or Naporar and ask for orders, it was because he chose not to.
Or because the Garwians chose not to let him,
Bakif said. He was still angry, Aralani could tell, but he could see the two Syndics edging their way into military affairs, and he clearly had no intention of ceding any of that territory.
The Sindicure is right to question Captain Thrawn's decisions.
To question them?
Sistalmo bit out.
But that discussion can wait until he's returned, and able to properly defend himself,
Bakif continued.
The immediate issue at hand is how to extract him safely from his reconnaissance.
Why should we?
Sistalmo demanded.
His activities are completely unauthorized. He got himself into this. He can get himself out.
Are you sure that's what you want, Syndic?
Bakif asked.
Why not?
Because it's Thrawn we're talking about,
Thurfian said sourly.
The General is suggesting there may be worse political and diplomatic consequences if we let him have his way than if we just go in and pluck him out.
Well, at least he'll no longer be an embarrassment to us,
Sistalmo grumbled.
Don't be so sure,
Thurfian said, his gaze shifting to Aralani.
How exactly would you do it, Admiral?
Straightforwardly, Aralani said. I take the Vigilant to the Primea system, contact them, and arrange to pick him up. If I leave immediately, I should be within the time frame he specified.
And if they refuse to give him up?
Why would they?
Bakif asked.
We have no quarrel with the Vax.
Aralani kept her expression steady. That was true, unless the Vax were already under Nicardoon control. In that case, the simple pickup mission she was pitching could get very ugly very fast.
Doesn't mean they won't have a quarrel with us,
Sistalmo said.
Particularly if they see Thrawn as a spy. But never mind them. What if these Nicardoon of yours have taken over?
We've already seen they aren't yet ready to engage the Ascendancy, Arulani reminded him.
Thurfian snorted.
No need to engage us when they can simply vaporize the Garvian ship with Thrawn aboard and claim it was an accident. All the more reason for the Vigilant to get there before it happens,
Vakif said grimly.
If you'll excuse us, we need to get this mission underway.
Of course,
Thurfian said.
Just as soon as we resolve the issue of the Vigilant Skywalker.
Arulani grimaced. She'd hoped they'd forgotten about that.
I promised Ciri's caregiver I'd take care of her, she said. I see no reason why I can't continue to do that.
You don't?
Thurfian asked.
The Admiral and Commander of a Night Dragon Man of War, and you think you'll have time to cater to the needs of a child, too?
He shook his head.
No. We need to find a new caregiver before you can leave Chila.
I'm afraid that won't be possible,
Vakif said.
All Skywalkers and caregivers are already committed to other ships.
Let me propose a solution,
Sistalmu offered.
My wife served as a caregiver for 2 years before we were married. Her record of that time is very clean. Reinstate her, and she and I can travel aboard the Vigilant together.
Thalias chose me, Arulani said firmly. As Ciri's official caregiver, she has final authority to shift that duty while she's aboard my ship.
But she's not aboard your ship now, is she?
Sistalmu countered.
She was when she named me as her replacement, Arulani said. I have no intention of giving up that mandate, and you have no authority to take it from me.
I have every authority!
Enough!
Vakif cut in.
Syndic Sistalmu, how far away is your wife?
She can be here in 2 hours.
Call her now,
Vakif ordered.
Admiral, I agree that regulations support your position. But Syndic Thurfian is right to remind us of your other responsibilities. I'm therefore ruling that Syndic Sistalmu's wife will share caregiver duty with you, and will take the primary position whenever you're otherwise occupied. Any questions?
Arulani suppressed a scowl. The last thing she wanted was a strange woman suddenly entering Ciri's life. The girl had enough problems socializing with other people as it was, without disrupting things further. And she absolutely didn't want a syndic on her bridge, watching her every movement, and undoubtedly gathering ammunition to be used against her somewhere down the line. Couldn't Vakif see this was yet another attempt by the Syndicure to intrude on the fleet's sphere of authority?
No questions, General, she said stiffly.
Good, Vakif said. Thank you for your interest and input, Syndics. Syndic Sistalmu, you and your wife will report to Admiral Arulani's shuttle in 3 hours for immediate transport to the Vigilant. Admiral, another moment of your time?
Arulani stayed where she was, her eyes locked on Vakif as Sistalmu and Thurfian walked through the doorway behind her. She waited until the door closed.
Don't say it,
Vakif warned before she could speak.
No, it's not ideal. In fact, it's about as far from ideal as it could possibly be.
Then why did you agree to it?
Because I didn't have any choice, Vakif said. Because if I'd tried to keep Sistalmu off the Vigilant, he'd have tied us up in procedural twist wire until Thrawn died of old age.
He paused.
And because you don't have a mandate. Because Thalias is not, in fact, an official caregiver.
Arulani felt her eyes narrow.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that she sweet-talked her way aboard the Springhawk,
Vakif said.
She's a former Skywalker herself, which made the sweet-talking a little easier. But the fact is that she has no official credentials.
But she's Smith,
Arulani said, trying to sort it through.
Are you telling me that someone with Thurfian's connections and suspicions hasn't figured that out?
On the contrary,
Bakif said darkly.
He apparently showed up at the last minute to help get her aboard in that position.
Really? Aralani said. What was the cost of that assistance?
I don't know,
Bakif said.
But there was a cost, or will be somewhere down the line. With Thurfian, that's practically guaranteed. My point is that all he had to do was throw that into the conversation, and you'd have been out completely. But he didn't. The question is why?
Possibly because he'd prefer having me involved with our Skywalker over turning her completely over to the wife of an Irisi syndic.
Normally, I'd agree with you, Bakif said. But you've surely noticed that despite their family's rivalries, he and Zistalmu have shown remarkable unity in their attempts to get Thrawn out of the fleet, or at least out of any position of influence. I don't think he'd have a problem with Zistalmu's wife being in complete charge.
And of course leaving Thrawn abandoned on Primea would be a permanent solution to their perceived problem.
Exactly, Bakif said. No. I think he didn't denounce you because that would also have gotten Thalias thrown off the Springhawk when she returns. And there's something he still wants her to do. Probably something connected to the price of getting her aboard in the first place.
He waved a hand in dismissal.
But that can wait. Right now, we need to get Thrawn off Primea before the situation becomes too much to handle.
I wouldn't worry about Thrawn, sir, Aralani said. He's expecting me, of course, but if I don't show, I'm sure he'll find his own way home.
Thrawn's not the one I was worried about, Bakif said tartly. It's the Ascendancy that may wind up in a situation we can't get out of.
Point taken, sir, Aralani said, wincing. I've got Wutro'o working on a flight prep. We'll be ready to go by the time Zistalmu and his wife arrive.
Good, Bakif said. And watch him, Aralani. Watch him very closely. I know Zistalmu. He wouldn't voluntarily walk into possible danger unless he thought there was a way to turn that to his and his family's advantage.
Don't worry, sir, Aralani assured him. Whatever game he's playing, I think he'll find that his cards aren't nearly as good as he thinks they are.
There was a right way to do things, Kilori fumed to himself as he hurried toward the bridge. And there was a wrong way. In this case, the right way was to keep on schedule, do a proper ship prep, and ensure that the captain, the crew, and especially the navigator were moving along at a steady but relaxed pace. The wrong way was exactly the opposite of all those. That wrong way was what was happening right now.
Pathfinder!
Someone called from down the corridor in front of him.
Pathfinder! I'm coming!
Kilori called back, cursing under his breath. Yiv's whole plan to eliminate Thrawn hinged on the Garwian ship being exactly where it was supposed to be when it was supposed to be there. Kilori's job was to make that happen from the Garwian end of the ambush. But even he wasn't good enough to stall an entire day just because the Garwian envoy had suddenly decided to cut short the negotiations and head home early. Now what was he supposed to do? The bridge was the typical scene of chaos when he arrived. The captain was barking orders. The officers and crew were scrambling to get their boards up and running. Off in one corner, Kilori felt his winglets flatten as he headed for the navigator's seat. Off in the corner, the Garwian he'd heard the others refer to only as Officer Frangelic stood silently, watching the commotion like a director overseeing a stage performance.
There you are,
the captain growled as Kilori settled himself into his seat.
How soon can you be ready?
Kilori glanced at the status boards. They were still deep within Primea's gravity well. Several minutes at least to get far enough out that they could access hyperspace. More like a quarter hour if they made a more leisurely departure. If he insisted on an additional status check of the hyperdrive, the engines, and the environmental systems before they left, it would buy him a little more time. His winglets stiffened in frustration. A little more time, but not nearly enough. If Yiv hadn't spotted the prep work, the Benevolent would have lost all chance to capture or kill Thrawn, which was undoubtedly the whole point of the sudden change in schedule. Thrawn, the envoy, Frangelic, maybe all three together, had decided to sneak Thrawn away from Primea before the Benevolent could launch his attack. And then, a movement on the aft display caught Kilori's eye. Yiv's flagship, the Deathless, had appeared over the horizon behind them, running a lower orbit and casually gaining on the Garwian ship. Oh, he felt his winglets relax fractionally. So Yiv hadn't been caught napping after all. Perfect. Now Kilori could let the Garwians move out of the gravity well on their own schedule, then make sure he didn't take them into hyperspace until Yiv made his move.
Officer Frangelic,
the Garwian at the communication station called.
The Vax send an answer to your query. They've done a complete search of the diplomatic offices and guest quarters, and neither Artistic Master Sforno nor his companion are anywhere to be found.
Tell them they must be mistaken,
Frangelic said tersely.
If they're not here, they have to be there.
Kilori's winglets froze in place. Thrawn wasn't aboard? No, that couldn't be. He had to be here. If he wasn't, then Yiv was about to attack a Garwian ship and almost certainly kill everyone aboard for nothing.
The Vax are very insistent,
the comm officer said.
They've searched everywhere the Chiss might be. There's no sign or trail of them.
Kilori stared at the display and the Nicardoon battle dreadnought coming steadily up into attack range. He needed to get word to Yiv, and he needed to do it fast. Only he couldn't. With this many Garwians milling around, there was no way he could get to any of the comm panels without being seen. But without comm access, he couldn't talk to the Deathless. Or rather, he couldn't talk to the Deathless.
Officer Frangelic,
he called, turning toward the officer.
Excuse me, but I remember Artistic Master Sforno talking at length with General Yiv the Benevolent at the reception our first night on Primea. I believe that among other things they discussed Vac art and art displays. Perhaps the Benevolent will have some idea where he might have gone.
Perhaps,
Frangelic said.
Calm. You heard?
Yes, Officer Frangelic.
Signal to General Yiv,
Frangelic ordered.
Put the question to him.
Kilori took a deep breath, his winglets finally relaxing. Thrawn might have slipped out of Yiv's immediate trap, but all he'd really done was postpone his fate. Even though the Vax weren't yet under full Nicardoon domination, Yiv had enough forces in the region to quickly isolate Primea and keep the fugitives on the ground. Sooner or later, either he or the Vax would run them down. And really, how long could a pair of blueskins hide among a planet full of aliens? Chapter 13. Thalias had known from the start that Thrawn's plan was doomed. Their blue skin was nothing like the pale amber skin and black stub hairs of the indigenous population, to say nothing about the contrast between glowing red Chiss eyes and the Vax dull brown. The hooded cloaks that many of the people wore would make things less obvious, But Thalias had no illusions as to how well that would work in the long run. How many of the locals actually used the hoods, she'd argued, instead of letting the sun and breeze wash over their faces? The answer, it turned out, was pretty nearly all of them.
You're just lucky it's raining today,
she said, as she and Thrawn walked along the street, the light drizzle beating gently on the tops of their hoods and dripping off the fronts.
Not at all, he replied. Up to now, we've always traveled the city in vehicles, where the hoods are unnecessary. But during those trips, I observed that most pedestrians use their hoods nearly all the time, protecting against rain, but also against sunlight.
So really the only danger we were in was if today was just cloudy?
He chuckled. A point. But even then, wearing hoods would not be so rare as to attract attention.
Thalias peered past the edge of her hood into the diner they were passing. Inside, she noted uneasily, the Vax had all laid their hoods back.
That's fine out here, she said. But eventually we're going to have to go inside somewhere. What happens then?
Let's find out,
Thrawn said. Taking her arm, he steered her toward a door with a faded sign above it.
In here.
What is it?
Thalias asked, peering at the sign. She made an effort to learn the Vax script over the past few days, but she was a long way from being able to read any of it.
Hopefully, answers,
Thrawn said. And then they were at the door, and Thrawn had pushed it open and ushered Thalias inside. She blinked, ducked her head forward sharply to shake some of the water from her hood onto the mat at their feet, and then looked up to find they were in an art gallery. Thrawn was already walking slowly forward, the back of his hood moving rhythmically as he turned his head back and forth, studying everything around him. Thalias followed more slowly, looking surreptitiously at the handful of Vak patrons wandering among the easels and pedestals, or gazing up the wall hangings and paintings. All of them had their own hoods thrown back. Would they notice that she and Thrawn were still wearing theirs? More important, would they wonder why? A harsh voice rattled off some words behind them. Apparently they would.
Good afternoon,
Thrawn said calmly in Minisiat, not turning around.
I'm afraid I don't understand your language. Do you speak this one?
Thalias grimaced. Everyone in the place was now gazing at the visitors. So much for slipping by undetected.
I speak it,
the voice came back.
Who are you? What do you want here?
I came to see Vakar, and to thereby understand the Vak people,
Thrawn said.
As to who we are...
He paused, slid off his hood, and turned around.
We are friends.
Someone made a strangling sort of sound. Two or three others gave out with startled-sounding words, and Thalias heard a single whispered,
Jeez! The Vak have no friends,
the first speaker said.
Not now. Not ever.
Thalias turned, also pushing back her hood.
The Vak who had spoken, a female, Thalias tentatively identified her from the cut of her loose-fitting tunic skirt, had a wide sash across her chest, adorned with a double row of intricately carved wooden pins.
Did such extra adornment mark her as the gallery's curator?
Surely that is untrue, Thrawn said. What about Yiv the Benevolent? He claims to be a friend.
People claim many things,
the curator said.
You too have now claimed to be friends. Yet I see no evidence of it.
Did you see evidence with Yiv?
Why do you ask?
The curator countered.
Do you seek to sow discord among the Vax?
Thrawn shook his head.
I seek information,
The leaders of the Vac Combine seem impressed by Yiv. They see his power and imagine the Nicardun are respected and honored. They believe that joining with him will bring the same respect to the Vacs.
He lifted a hand.
I merely wish to know if the Komin people believe likewise.
What do you know about the Komin people?
The curator scoffed.
Only a little, Thrawn admitted. I can see what is woven into your artwork. That the Vax strive for unity while still determined to honor the individual. That is a good and proper philosophy. But I seek to understand how that affects the lives of the Vac people.
Then seek elsewhere,
the curator said.
This is a place of meditation and appreciation. I will not be drawn into discussions with strangers of things personal to the Vacs.
I understand, and bow to your wishes, Thrawn said, taking Thalias's arm. May your future be of sunlight and peace.
A minute later, the two Chiss were back out in the rain.
Whatever you were hoping to accomplish, Thalias said, I don't think it worked.
As I said, I hoped to learn more about the Vax, Thrawn said. And perhaps to make them aware that as they decide their course with the Nicardun, they should also figure the Chiss into their calculations.
Thalias gave a small snort.
Not that the Sindicure is likely to ever lift a finger to help them. I suppose you also realize that if we keep walking around town this way, we might as well call Yiv and announce ourselves.
There will likely be a response, Thrawn agreed. That too may work in our favor. If the Nicardun are sufficiently heavy-handed in their search for us, the Vax may see less friendship and more dominance in their presence on Primea.
Only if the leaders notice,
Thalias said.
I doubt the people who visit art galleries have much say in their nation's affairs.
Thrawn leaned out from under his hood to give her a puzzled look.
You don't see it.
See what?
He turned back under the hood and for a few steps was silent.
You heard me tell the gallery curator that the Vax seek unity while still honoring the individual. That's true enough. The problem is that their leaders have carried that philosophy too far. They spend so much time listening to all points of view, I believe they refer to them as thought lines, that they have difficulty arriving at decisions.
You can't mean all thought lines, Thalias said. There must be billions of Vax. All of them can't be equally important.
In theory, yes, they are,
Thrawn said.
In actual practice, of course, the number must certainly be limited. But it still leaves the Vax with a longer decision process than that of most species. That hesitation, as they gather and weigh all opinions, makes the leaders appear weak.
Well, they won't have that problem if they let the Nicardun move in,
Thalias said grimly.
The only thought line that'll matter will be Yiv's.
Indeed,
Thrawn agreed.
We'll attempt to pass that message on to a few more citizens before Yiv or Vax Security track us down. After that, or sooner if it seems prudent, we'll retreat to the hideout I set up 2 days ago and wait for Admiral Arulani.
Someplace nice and quiet and away from the spaceport, I hope,
Thalias said.
The first thing Yiv will probably assume is that we'll try to steal a ship.
Indeed he will,
Thrawn agreed.
So, where are we going?
Thrawn leaned forward, giving her a smile around the edge of his dripping hood.
To the spaceport, he said, to steal a ship.
Thalias had envisioned either a stealthy creep through the warehouse area that filled the ground outside the spaceport security fence, or else a mad dash across that same obstacle course. both mental scenarios ran into a blank space as she tried to imagine how they would get past the fence itself. In the end, it was neither the dash nor the sneak. It was instead a box. Not just any box. A box, a large crate, really, sitting with a dozen others near one of the entrance gates. Thrawn took a careful look around as they reached it, then popped one of the side panels open and ushered Thalias inside. From the size, she'd recognized that the crate would have enough room to comfortably house both of them. What she hadn't expected was the seats, the supplies of food and water, and even the crude but serviceable, if potentially awkward, bathroom facilities.
"My apologies for the accommodations," Thrawn said, as he sealed them in.
There was no lamp, but carefully concealed slits on all four walls admitted both air and light.
"I wasn't sure how quickly we could get here, or whether we would have to dodge or outwait patrols, so I specified our pickup for the day after tomorrow."
"That's all right," Thalias said, looking around. "It beats being a prisoner on a Nicardoon ship."
"Or floating dead in space."
Thalias winced.
"Definitely beats that. You think that's what Yiv was planning?"
Thrawn shrugged.
"He certainly has an abundance of confidence. That would suggest he'd want to interrogate me before my death. On the other hand, we captured one of his ships, and the Nicardoon may have a strict code concerning vengeance. I need more information before I could determine that."
"Erring on the side of caution works for me," Thalias said.
"How did you find this crate anyway?"
"I didn't find it. I made it," Thrawn said. "Rather, Defense Overlord Frangelic and I made it. You'll recall I asked him to bring a shipping container aboard with us."
"Ah,"
Thalias said, remembering now.
"You said we'd be using it on the trip back."
"And so we are,"
Thrawn said.
"He and I put it together on our journey to Brymia. And once we learned the Vax shipping protocols, we labeled it for transfer."
"So you've done this sort of thing before?"
Thrawn smiled.
"Hardly. But it seems straightforward enough."
"If it works," Thalias thought. "So, where are we being shipped to?"
"We're just going inside the fence," Thrawn said. "The ship we're supposed to be delivered to isn't here yet. But once it arrives, it'll need to make a fast turnaround. The standard VAC pattern under those conditions is to gather all cargo containers together near the designated landing area so that the loading can go more quickly."
"Okay,"
Thalias said, frowning.
"So we're going to some alien world?"
"Not at all," Thrawn assured her. "Once we're through security, we'll choose our moment and board one of the sentry freighters lined up just inside the fence. They're designed for long-range patrols, so there should be plenty of room aboard where we can wait for the Admiral."
"And then what? We just fly up and meet her?"
"Basically," Thrawn said. "Though there might be a complication or two along the way."
"Such as if someone else comes aboard and wants to fly it instead of you?"
"If that happens, we'll invite them to leave."
"Whether or not they want to go?"
"Don't worry. We aren't going to hurt anyone," he assured her. "Your restraint in such things speaks well of you."
"I just don't like beating up someone on their own world,"
Thalias muttered.
"Especially given the Ascendancy's whole non-intervention policy."
"That was actually what I was thinking about when I referred to your restraint," Thrawn said. "Regardless, it won't be a problem. I have a small aerosol of Tava mist, more than enough to fill a fighter craft's cockpit."
Thalias frowned.
"That's the sleepwalking drug."
It was Thrawn's turn to frown.
"Who calls it that?"
"People at my old school,"
Thalias explained, rolling her eyes at the memory.
A couple of them let off the stuff in class once, just to see everyone act like drooling moon brains. Hours of harmless fun, I guess.
The effect hardly lasts for hours, Thrawn said. An hour at the very most. But it is harmless.
Unless you're doing something tricky, Thalia said. Like, say, flying a sentry fighter?
We'll ease them outside and away from the fighter long before they get that far, Thrawn promised. And I have nostril filters for us, so that we won't be affected.
Handy, Thalia said, eyeing him closely. Do you normally carry that stuff around with you?
It's always worth taking precautions when facing uncertainties, Thrawn said. I knew we'd need to steal a ship, so I planned accordingly. Don't worry, we'll get through this.
Okay,
Thalia said. Personally, she wasn't feeling all that confident, but she was willing to trust him.
Can I take off this makeup now? This stuff has to weigh half a kilo.
It's closer to a third, actually, Thrawn corrected. And no, you'd best let it be. There's always a chance we'll be discovered, and you'll need to continue playing your role.
Fine,
Thalia said reluctantly. Actually, aside from the weight, she was starting to get used to the contoured hard shell paste. What she hated most about it was the broader idea it represented, and the role of a nervous hostage she had to play while she was wearing it.
So, another day and a half. I don't suppose you brought a pack of cards?
Actually, I did, Thrawn said. But I thought we could talk first.
About?
About why you asked to come aboard the Springhawk. A warning bell went off in the back of Thalia's brain.
I came to take care of Ciri,
she said cautiously.
That's why you were aboard, Thrawn said. But it's not why you asked to come. One of my officers informed me that the Myth sent you to investigate my performance as the Springhawk's commander. Is that true?
Thalia felt her hand squeeze itself into a fist.
I assume that would be Mid-Captain Simacro.
Does it make a difference where the information came from?
It might, Thalia said. Did he give you a reason for telling you that?
Not specifically, Thrawn said. I believe he's concerned about cohesion in the command structure, if family matters interfere.
That may be what he says, Thalia said. But I'm guessing he's hoping for some of that family interference.
To what end?
To the end of the Myth deciding they don't want you commanding the Springhawk and having the expansionary fleet move you somewhere else, Thalia said. That would open the way for Simacro to take back command.
Your analysis holds several logical flaws, Thrawn said. First, the Nine families don't dictate military assignments. Second, Mid-Captain Simacro has no reason to wish command of the Springhawk. With his experience and capabilities, he'll surely be offered a more prestigious ship than a mere heavy cruiser.
The Springhawk is pretty prestigious,
Thalias told him.
Maybe more than you realize. But even if it wasn't, the Oofsva family would still want it back. It got taken away from them. And they're notorious for resenting anything they see as a political backslide.
I see, Thrawn said.
Thalia peered closely at him in the dim light. From the slight frown around his eyes, it was clear that he didn't see at all.
But to answer your question, no. The Myth didn't send me,
she said, picking her words carefully.
In fact, the family fought me the whole way. I was just lucky that I was able to join the ship as a caregiver instead of a family observer.
Interesting, Thrawn said. Did they give you a reason for not wanting you as an observer?
They didn't actually say anything, one way or the other. Thalia said. They just kept throwing barriers in my way. New forms I suddenly needed to fill out. New people I had to chase down to approve my request. New people on Chila or Naporar who had to be brought into the loop. That sort of thing.
Perhaps they didn't think you were qualified to observe, Thrawn suggested. Or perhaps there was interference from other families.
If there were other families in the mix, I never saw them, Thalia said sourly. As for qualifications, I've got the full complement of eyes, ears, and brains. What else do I need?
That would be a question for the family, Thrawn said. But it leads to yet another question. If the family didn't initiate your arrival, it was your doing. Why?
Thalia braced herself. She'd hoped to avoid that question completely. But down deep, she'd known it would eventually rise up to slap her in the face. She'd come up with a couple of plausible-sounding lies, and for a moment she was tempted to use one of them. But sitting here, listening to his measured voice, she knew it would be useless.
It's going to sound stupid, she warned.
Noted. Continue. She braced herself.
I just wanted to see you again, she said. You changed my life, and I wanted to see you again. That's all.
He frowned at her. Really? How exactly did I change your life?
We met once before,
she said, feeling even more ridiculous. Of course he wouldn't remember such a minor interaction.
It was a long time ago, when I was finishing my last trip as a Skywalker.
Ah, yes, Thrawn said, still frowning.
Aboard the Tomra, when I was a cadet.
That's right,
Thalia said, breathing a little easier. So he did remember her. That eased at least a little of the awkwardness she was feeling.
Captain Vorlip came in. You talked...
And she spun me around to see if I could really feel the ship as I'd claimed.
Yes, Thalia said. And you impressed her.
Did I?
Of course, Thalia said. She told me afterward that...
Because she also sent 50 down marks ahead of me to Tehareem.
Thalia felt her eyes widen.
She did what? Why?
For unauthorized intrusion into the Tomra's command area, Thrawn said. I was 3 months working them off.
But...
Thalia sputtered.
But she was impressed by you.
Perhaps as a person she was impressed, Thrawn said. Perhaps even as a spacefarer. But as an officer of the Chiss Ascendancy... She had a duty to enforce regulations.
But it was an honest mistake.
Intent and motivations are irrelevant, Thrawn said. Judgments can focus only on actions.
I suppose,
Thalia murmured, her gut twisting inside her. So his memory of her would always be linked to an unpleasant episode in his career.
Wonderful. How exactly did our meeting change your life?
Thalia sighed. The last thing she wanted was to keep talking about it. But she decided to tell the truth, and there was no way out of it now.
You gave me hope, she said.
The words sounded a lot sillier when she said them out loud than they had when they were just bouncing around inside her head.
I mean, I was 13. I thought my life was over. You told me I'd find a new path, and that I could choose how things worked out.
Yes, Thrawn said,
his voice thoughtful. Not sympathetic, not encouraging, not even really responsive, just thoughtful. Thalia had thought about this moment for a long time. She'd wondered what he would say. What she would say,
and if it would open up new vistas for her life and her future. And now, nothing. He was thoughtful. Just thoughtful. She closed her eyes, wishing she was anywhere else in the galaxy. She should never, never have started down this path in the first place.
I had an older sister, Thrawn said, his voice almost too soft for her to hear. She was 5 when she disappeared. My parents would never tell me where she went.
Thalias opened her eyes again. He was still sitting there in the gloom, still looking thoughtful. But now there was something